Hey, everybody. Jason Burmis here, and it is officially Brexit Day. And I am joined by Tony Gosling to discuss everything Brexit, what it was, what it is, what the hell today means anyway for anybody, and how the people over on the other side of the pond feel about it. Before that, Tony, why don't you introduce yourself to my audience and tell people where they can find you.
Okay, well, it's Tony Gosling. I'm a former BBC radio journalist and found it really impossible to tell the truth at the Ministry of Truth, just not possible. But I've carried on doing an independent radio show here in Bristol in the UK. The port where John Cabot sailed from in 1497 to do his reconnaissance for genocide and lay the way for the opening up of the New World, for the New World Order. I suppose that's a British and an American and a European project. But anyhow, I've been involved in lots of things, Jason. One of the things I'm really passionate about is land rights. And this is something that, you know, you could probably sit and talk to Native Americans and rap with them for a long, long time about. But it's about our right to somewhere to live. We've got a whole situation with a new government here in Britain, now talking about criminalising gypsies and travellers. So they're saying basically you have nowhere that you can go. Ha! Huh. Well, that's, you know, completely wrong under all sorts of levels. But most importantly, basic stuff to do with Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Everyone should have a right to a job. Everyone should have a right to shelter, a roof over their heads. Everyone should have a right to food, basic food. We're not talking about luxury down at the Ritz and water. And this sort of stuff is the basics of life. Everyone needs that right. And I think that's what many of us are fighting for years. So that's me. I did the thing called the Bilderberg website, which we might come on to talking about Brexit, because the Bilderbergers have been a massive, massive force in creating the European Union, really since the Second World War. Mm-hmm. It was something which was devised in the United States by the Council on Foreign Relations in 1943. And it didn't even happen for another more than 10 years. The first meeting of Bilderberg was 1954. So there's that. But my main stuff right now is simply journalism and trying to make sure the people of Bristol have got some reliable sources on things like the coronavirus outbreak, where there's not even any mention in any of our mainstream press, apart from, I think, one, the Daily Mail, that, oh dear, there's one of the main biological protection labs for the whole of China happens to be in Wuhan. And this is something that the mainstream press don't even dare to go anywhere near. Mm-hmm. So that you can see exactly what's going through the minds of these people is, well, I don't want to create a panic. Well, hang on a minute. Don't treat us like idiots, please. And that is exactly the way, having worked there, I can tell you the mainstream press do treat most ordinary people as idiots. And that is, of course, what we'll end up with if we allow our media to carry on treating people like children with all their trivia and their lies, then you end up with a population which can't really engage with the whole democratic process. They're trying to de-educate the whole population. So that's me in a nutshell. Well, it wasn't really a nutshell, was it?
So I guess just because you brought it up before we get full Brexit, I do want to acknowledge that just before you came on, our government had a press conference literally within the last 30 minutes where they have now declared a national health emergency. They are going to be routing all flights from China through 7 airports. They are going to be quarantining everybody who comes through, who came through Wuhan. And then they said something about voluntary quarantining of people who had been to mainland China that is supervised, whatever that means. I didn't get to catch all of it, but I did catch some of it. So we're going to touch on that at the end. But let's talk Brexit really quickly. This has now been years in the making. I want to say now it's been over 3, correct? Am I crazy in that?
3.5 years, really, since the referendum. And I want to touch on a couple of reasons why I think that referendum happened, because it had been being talked about for decades. It's been a major point of contention in the Labour Party for many years, since 1975, when we had our first referendum to stay in, because it was Edward Heath, the people, many people say child molester, Prime Minister from the Conservative Party in the 1970s that brought us in 1972-3 without having any kind of referendum. We joined the European Economic Community. So it's been a long, long time that the Labour Party... But the thing is, the Conservatives, all that time, have had a very strong contingent within them who are against the increasing super state structures being built in the EU. But, I mean, I think the other thing is to think, if Brexit was to happen in the United States, what would it look like? You know, because I get a sense from a lot of the stuff I've been reading that the Americans are a little bit jealous of seeing one of these enormous, great super states have a little bit of a kick up the backside.
Well, we don't know what's going on. You know, we're sorry. So let's just get that straight. I think that people just automatically think, especially when you talk about people that are supposedly progressive and on the left, and then you look at even the people on the right and economic-wise, they're all saying that this is bad for the economy. You know, it's not a good thing. Oh, and then the left, you know, it's against the proper type of globalization and regulation to make sure these kind of pandemics and crazy things don't happen. They don't realize that our country, most of them, don't realize, number one, we give aid to a ton of different countries. That's how they've been able to kind of exploit the aid to the Ukraine. Well, how about aid to Israel? How about us being militarily involved in Libya, in AFRICOM? All these things are real in the Yemen situation. So I hate to say it, but the average American man is tweeting like Rand Paul is a fucking Russian asset because he tried to say the name that not be spoken in the impeachment hearing, and Judge Roberts wouldn't have it. And by the way, let's not say that name, Tony, because out of the 940-plus videos I have on this station, I didn't say the name. I dared to play the clip of Louis Gomer saying Erica Caramello Barr's name. It actually went up for review, got monetized, and then it got locked globally. So you cannot see it on YouTube unless you are me and signed in. So that's where we're at in this country. That's the type of censorship and misinformation we have.
So let me just try and draw this analogy with the states. Imagine if you had a vote in Texas to secede from the Union, and the Texans were to say, actually, well, we've had enough of being with you. You've had all our oil. Most of the oil supplies in Texas have been exhausted, but we've had enough of this Union. We don't want anything to do with Washington anymore. We're quite happy to have routes, but we're going to have proper borders. We're going to have checks on the borders. We don't want people coming in and out without a say-so, and we're going to have Texas passports. That's the sort of thing, in a way. Okay, so it's on a much, much smaller scale here in Europe that they've tried to get all these different nations together. But effectively, that's what the US was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a federation of countries which had come together, well, states, obviously, through mutual consent. And the Civil War, after the Civil War in the US in the 1870s, it changed. That was one of the main changes. Slavery was an important part of it, but I mean, I don't want to like go on too much about your history, but that's the way I see it, is that what they've been doing in Europe is trying to mimic what happened in the US by having all these people together in a kind of club and then saying, hang on, guys, you can't leave anymore. The Hotel California.
Well, I would have to say this, that would be our executive branch at this point, and the military-industrial complex that's built up around it, and now all these privatized industries like Booz Allen Hamilton and Stratfor. That's the glue, the bureaucracy that sticks everything together, the Raytheon, the Lockheed Martin. But what's, I think, brilliant about our country is that it is a constitutional republic, and Texas is very different from New York. And where I live in New York, upstate New York, we want to secede from the city at this point. And I'm talking about little itty-bitty city. I'm not even, dude, this bail reform, I know you have no idea what I'm talking about, but on January 1st, they changed our law in New York State so that they retroactively started letting people go who were accused of manslaughter and beyond, who had killed people. Now, we had a case in New York where a man robbed four banks in a week, was let go every time because the bail reform has him let go for zero amount of dollars. They had to bring the feds in to arrest this man down the street from where I live. I mean, less than a mile away, Tony, I had a woman run down in the street who was basically dead when she was run down. She was not in a car, by a man who had no license, a ton of different priors, and had unpaid tickets on top of it. So priors, tickets, no license. Now, had he not run that woman down 2 months prior and got pulled over by the police, they would have impounded his car and towed it away, and he would have at least, if he got a ticket, he would have had to go away. They let him drive the fuck away, Tony.
Okay, well, look, I mean, it's the law of the jungle. But look, let's get back to Brexit.
Yeah.
Tipping points, what caused the referendum in 2016? First of all, I think it was this very, very little known. You won't see anything really about this in the press. I don't think anywhere, is that in March 2016, June, July, a couple of months before the referendum was actually happened, there was in the previous 6 months or so, there had been a attempt by Deutsche Börse to take over the London Stock Exchange. So this was something which had been arranged by a guy called Carsten Kengetter, who I think he was UBS Switzerland. I'm not sure, one of the big Swiss banks. He was connected up with German banks too, but they wanted to take over the London Stock Exchange. And it seems pretty clear to me that there were the establishment in London basically saying, look, this is too far. We're not going to let the Germans take over the London Stock Exchange. The other thing is the European Defence Union. So this is the British military sitting there thinking with the the colonels, generals or whatever, the brigadiers, saying, do you fancy being under the command of a French general or French field marshal? Because we had an exercise the other week. It was just, we didn't really enjoy the experience. So these army people particularly take their national pride quite seriously. And the idea that they're going to be ordered around by a foreign general doesn't sit very well. So I would suggest that the introduction of the European Defence Union, which, by the way, Ursula von der Leyen, the new president of Europe, she's a civil servant, really, but she's in charge of what new laws go through, etc. She is one of the biggest advocates for the European Defence Union there's been over the last 3 or 4 years. And it's quite clear that she's got this job because that's one of the things that she's proven herself to be committed to. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see an EU army. But as all this stuff starts to happen, I think there's going to be people right across the continent looking at the Brits and saying, well, yeah, maybe we should do the same. But are we going to get a chance? Is there oligarchy? Is Macron, for example, going to give the French a referendum?
Well, can he almost not? They're not backing down. I mean, they've now been – all right, so just so Americans, most people have no idea that what a yellow vest is. They look at you strange. We have now that going on what? Yeah, exactly. They could be that – your yellow cardigan. It'd be the same thing. It's a piece of clothing. That's got to be going on 14, 15 months, maybe closer to a year and a half. I'm not sure. Then that wasn't enough. So they actually started shutting things down in the country because they didn't want to give up their pensions for their kids and grandkids. At least they'll get out in the street. I mean, I don't see them not getting out on the street. I think that they would be the next domino to fall. I think Macron and his backers should be pretty concerned.
Well, he was he had a helicopter ready, didn't he, a few weeks ago to get out of the Elysee Palace in case the rioters and the strikers got too close. So look, I mean, you know, that this is how they're up. They're living on the edge, and that's what these powerful oligarchs, which is effectively what they are, the plutocrats. I mean, the guy's a banker; he's not really a politician. This is what they get off on, really, is by taking it to the edge. For us, the rest of us, you know, the millions, the population, the nearly billion people that live in Europe, this is really taking the mickey. And so there's going to be, I'm quite sure, more interest in getting out. But look, let's go to the origins of the EU. Where does it actually come from? So, I mean, I did a bit of stuff about this, gosh, must be 3 or 4 years ago. It was a video which was called What the BBC Won't Tell You About Brexit, Jason. And I did just ridiculously well on YouTube before they algorithmed me and my public inquiry channel out. You know, so they've changed the algorithms now. That went up to 1.7. It's now around about 1.7, 1.8 million hits. And it was a review of the American journalist, Paul Manning. He was a CBS journalist during World War II. He actually flew in planes over Europe doing bombing raids and then came back and did reports live in the evening. Or in the morning, I don't know, well, what time of the day, I don't know, but to the US. So he's the voice that many of our grandparents, or your grandparents in the US, would have heard commentating on the Second World War as it happened, or maybe great-grandparents. So he was an absolutely super credible guy, but he did this book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, about the use of banks in order to, and finance in order to take over countries. So you start buying up shares in banks, and those banks have got massive investments in big industries. They've paid for many of those industries. And so as you buy the banks up in the foreign countries, you start to buy up and own and control the industries. And this is really what that book was about. It's the German tactics, even before the Second World War started, in getting great big investments in these banks, including in the UK, right? So they would, but largely France, Belgium, places like that. So that was, I mean, obviously quite an important, I think, book. So anyway, if any of your viewers want to have a look at that, that's called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And the actual video is What the BBC Won't Tell You About Brexit. So as I did that video, Jason, what happened was that lots of people came back to me with more information saying, ah, but you missed this bit out and you missed this. Which is one of the wonderful things about journalism is when people think, respond and say, yes, here we've got some another piece of the jigsaw here, Tony. And so I've been able to put together a pretty reasonable, you know, timeline of how it happened. Really quickly, 1921 in Munich, something was happening. The formation of the Nazi Party, right? The NSDAP formed in 1921. Largely, the ideologues behind it were connected with the Theosophical Society, Alice Bailey's lot. And they were trying to create, really, this whole mythology about German nationalism and how wonderful and brilliant the Germans have been all the way through history, etc. So 2 years later, in the same city, the Pan-European Union was set up. It's called the Kalergi Plan, K-A-L-E-R-G-I. And he set up this whole thing to create a superstate, effectively. And this is 1923. But so this started rolling on and on. Then we got into World War II. 1943, Hjalmar Schacht, who was the finance minister in Nazi Germany, came up with this plan called the Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft, right? So this basically was the EEC. It translates in European Economic Community. And it was the plan for the occupation of Europe and how they were going to basically tax and run industry and plan things in Europe, how the Germans were going to do. Europäische Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft. So that was 1943. That was published by the Nazis saying, well, now we've occupied Europe. We need a plan to run it. This is it. So then we had after, right at the very end of the Second World War, you've got Martin Bormann, the Hitler's private secretary, set up this thing called the Red House Meeting, August 1944, just after D-Day. I mean, basically, once the Germans realized, crikey, the Allies are coming, the Americans and the Brits are heading for Berlin. Obviously, the Russians had been for much longer. But when it became clear that that was it, so they set up this meeting, really, to get all of the wealth that they gathered from the whole of Europe, looted, really, in a massive, you know, 3 or 4 years of wartime raiding, and squirrel it around the world. So that was what that meeting was all about. And it was actually a US intelligence report that the Daily Mail cited was when I first came across this. But it's absolutely riveting stuff, I think. You know, so that what they've got is a plan for a Fourth Reich, effectively. So we're going to set up a kind of empire using ex-SS people, using Jewish people in order to disguise the fact that it's a Nazi financial empire. And that's where that's what the Red House meeting was all about. So then we had, you know, other things like, you know, the much more commonly known, like the Treaty of Rome, like the European Economic Community, and now the EU. But I'd like to think that today is the beginning of the end of the EU. But let's not forget, right? Let's not forget that we also have three-pronged massive problems in the world, which the oligarchy can trigger at any time they want. So we may have an economic collapse. They may blame it on Brexit, but it may have nothing to do with Brexit because it's waiting to happen when they feel like 1929, when there was a shortage of coal money and the stock exchange was pulled. So some people who are involved in the financial sector just decided, right, well, let's see what happens if we do this. And it crashed in 1929. Mm-hmm. So they could do the same sort of thing in spades with all this electronic money around now. So I think that's really where we are. There's also plans in the future in the EU, by the way. One of the reasons I'm very pleased to be leaving, to effectively end free speech. So that's anyone that feels that something has been said about them that they don't like, effectively, or information has been used from them, that they can then sue media organisations, including bloggers, etc., and get them shut down, literally. So there is this is a sort of what they call, I think, a criminal copyright law. So, you know, you can, maybe it's not, it's criminally enforceable. So they'll take you through the civil courts and you'll get a thing through the door. You would, or I would, something coming through the door saying, right, you've just lost this case, blah, blah. You put forward your evidence. We've decided it's not good enough and you've got to pay X. Now, you may not have it. Why? You know, you may not have that money. And if you don't have it, sorry, chum, you're like Julian Assange. You're sitting behind the bars in Belmarsh Prison. Oh, and by the way, we had Julian Assange's lawyer in Bristol here tonight speaking, because the mainstream press, as usual, Jason, do nothing on these subjects. I mean, I would suggest the BBC World Service is we don't really listen. My friends don't listen to the BBC domestic services at all now, because the World Service has got different line managers, different editors, and it's controlled directly by the Foreign Office. So no doubt they'll be shutting that avenue of truth out soon. Obviously, they're quite biased in many ways, but the World Service is completely different now. You get completely different news than you'll get on the domestic, because it's all being controlled. And for how long that goes on, it's difficult to tell, because Brexit may bring about some changes. Final thing to say is that, of course, it's not actually Brexit tonight. Okay, we're leaving the political union. But we're not leaving anything like the customs union or the single market or the European Court of Justice. That apparently, we hope, and remember Theresa May made a few promises, didn't she? So they better keep this, that we'll be leaving those by the end of this year. And the most likely deal that they'll do in order to leave is the CETA deal, C-E-T-A deal, that the European Union has done with Canada. Because the Conservative Party people, the government ministers and advisors, they reckon that the Canada deal that was done with the EU is roughly the sort of thing we want. So they're saying to the EU, right, we've already got this deal with Canada. If we tweak it, something to do with fisheries or whatever, change this, change a few lines here and there, we've got a deal. But of course, the European Union will make it as difficult as possible because they want to cause as much trouble. But the other thing is, of course, all those European countries, which are now going into a downturn because Germany's going into a financial downturn, desperately want to keep trade going. They want access to the British markets. So potentially we've got a reasonable Canada-style deal at the end of the year, and we've got our political independence back, and it may change things. One of the things I've seen this week, for example, is they're starting to reopen railways. They're now spending money, hundreds of millions of pounds, devoted to reopening old closed-down railway lines in the north of England, which should have been done years and years ago. But this is infrastructure, which was always in the hands of the EU before. Maybe they're starting to think, well, now we need to get involved in infrastructure, because our infrastructure over here, I don't know about you, particularly the north, is falling to pieces. Roads, railways, you know, people can't get to work. They're getting sacked because they can't get to work. And you know, we need a bit of investment, like almost like in Victorian time. We don't want to go back to Victorian labour conditions, right? But we do want some building of infrastructure, please.
Well, I wish that we would build new infrastructure. You know, everybody wants to shit on the Green Deal and for our new Green Deal for many reasons. But one of the things that we should have is like maglev trains and that type of infrastructure in the United States, like Eisenhower built in the 60s. I don't know, man. I just feel like it, you know, the little guy is getting pressed down again and again and again, and I'm glad to see you guys out of the EU. I hope it progresses, like you said, to a more meaningful way. Because you brought up Assange, I got one last question for you. The OPCW is now having these hearings with the United Nations. Is there any coverage in the European media whatsoever on this after these leaks from WikiLeaks? Because it is a complete blackout here in the United States.
It's another taboo, Jason. They don't cover it at all. They don't want people to know about it because it's not real journalism. And we have one of our journalists die last week from the BBC Today program. I mean, they've changed over the years. All of the people that ask questions, speak truth to power, get sacked. We don't want you anymore. You know, so at the moment we've got, for example, on the BBC's main flagship Question Time, we've had an enormous dumbing down of that show. We used to have a guy called David Dimbleby, whose father was one of the original current affairs producers and presenters on BBC. back in the 1940s and 50s. And he's been moved off of there, and this woman called Fiona Bruce has been put on, who basically runs she presents antique shows, antiques programs, and she hasn't got a clue about politics. So what you end up getting is just trivia. Yeah, but how did you feel about that? Well, we don't really need that in a current affairs program. And so the BBC is turning itself into a bit of a joke, really. And it'd be nice to see one of the reasons for that is if you look at the people that are running it, who have been appointed since the Tories got in 2010, mm-hmm. they've all been bankers, right? So you've got investment bankers from the City of London. You even had, I can't remember the woman's name, but she was the chair of the risk committee at HSBC during the time when they got busted in Mexico for putting great big compartments in the banks for allowing suitcases of cash through. So she was in charge of the risk committee at HSBC, the old opium bank, you know, from Hong Kong, to run the BBC. She was the chair of the whole organisation. So, of course, we didn't see any investigative documentaries into HSBC, did we? Mm-hmm. So the banks just think they can buy everything. I'm afraid they can't. They can try, but unfortunately, some of them are going to have to go to jail. It might be that they have to flee the country or whatever, but we're going to have to see this at some point. And I think it's quite good that we are now also a little bit independent of the US. I'd like to think, you know, Assange is probably the most important story that isn't really being covered mm-hmm. at the moment because of the incredible stuff that he revealed. I think, I don't know what you think, Jason, but I think his Vault 7 revelations about television spying on people, about things that
Snowden wouldn't even talk about. And remember, we didn't get all of Snowden's documents either.
Using hacking locomotives. Train locomotives in order to cause crashes, hacking cars to cause crashes, hacking aircraft to cause crashes, to assassinate people covertly. This was an incredible revelation. And so Assange has done a brilliant job for humanity. And yet all they can do is lock him up. And it's Lady Arbuthnot is the judge. And her husband is one of the top military people. So this is something we really do have to deal with. And, you know, there's quite a lot of pressure, at least amongst the alternative media, for something to be done about as getting Assange out. And so also I think it would be a real scandal it's difficult to predict, but whether he's going to be handed over to the US authorities, because
I think he is.
US, he won't even be able to talk to his lawyers. He's not even going to be able to speak to his lawyers, the press, or anybody. He's going to be completely gagged, literally, legally. He will not be allowed to speak to anybody. They may as well put a gag around his face. So in a way, that move by the US lawyers might make it much more likely that he stays here in Britain. But whether he'll be released or not, God only knows. Let's hope so.
Well, I doubt it, because he shouldn't even be there right now. I mean, there is no reason. There are no charges from the Switzerland case. There are no bail jumping regulations. That ended well over a month ago. He's gotten to talk to his lawyers 2 hours over the last 3+ weeks. They just said last week that he's no longer in 23 hours of solitary confinement, but who knows what they're really treating him like. I don't have a lot of high hopes.
Well, it was one of the most amazing things about getting him out of solitary was that it was a lot of the other Belmarsh prisoners were involved in the process of getting him out of solitary confinement. You know, so there is more awareness, obviously, in the jail of who he is and what he's done. You know, the idea that we've got all the good guys in jail is a rather topsy-turvy world that we're heading into.
People,
Jason,
think he's a fucking Russian asset over here, Tony. They're that brainwashed. They think he got his orders from fucking Poot himself on a cell phone to destroy America. And we have a president that is so compromised and so not what he said. The one time in the last 6 months our press asked Trump, who loved the fucking WikiLeaks, gotta get the WikiLeaks, you see the WikiLeaks? They ask him once and he says, I don't know much about it, it's not my thing. He knows about it, Barr knows about it, it's their Department of Justice, it's the end of free speech, not only in this country, but across the world, when you could extradite an Australian citizen for cyber terrorism when he didn't hack a thing to begin with, Tony. It's the upside down.
I haven't spoken to you since this Soleimani assassination because, I mean, that is really one of the most horrendous things I've seen. It's really a provocation for World War III. That was certainly the way I read it. This is someone comes in and takes out General Mike Milley, is he? The guy who's your chief of the general staff?
Yeah, but you know what? I'd say it like this.
If someone comes and assassinates him, is the American Pentagon not going to react? Or what are they going to do if something like that happens? I noticed, by the way, that the plane, you probably picked up on this, the plane that came down in Afghanistan last week, the guy who was supposedly the mastermind of the Soleimani assassination apparently was on there, and he was killed in it. Possibly by the Iranians in Afghanistan, giving the Taliban a little bit of help.
No,
but I think this is justice now. This is what is left of the international law system is that if you take out someone like Soleimani, maybe the guy that's made that decision or the operational commander in charge of the assassination, he's just going to find his plane crashing in a few weeks' time, which it looks like. Certainly, that's what the Russians have confirmed that. But I mean, it's impossible, obviously, to get the U.S. military to confirm it. I don't know if you saw the plane that came down. It's a big business jet with room for, 20, 30 people, maybe 25 people on it. And the Americans have said, or the U.S. military said, oh, there was only two people on it, and they're both their names, and then they published those names. That sounds to me like just the pilot and the co-pilot have been named, but everyone in the back is now secret. But one of them may well have been this guy who was behind the Soleimani operational commander of the Soleimani assassination.
Very interesting stuff. Guys, follow Tony Gosling on Twitter. Where else can they find you, Tony?
Well, you can have a listen online. Probably the easiest place to come to do our, because we do our weekly roundup. We just finished it a couple of hours ago here in Bristol. It's at thisweek.org.uk. I've also got a forum at 911forum.org.uk where we've been looking at all sorts of stuff. One of the things we did this week was the assassination of General Patton at the end of the Second World War for saying all sorts of interesting things like we were fighting on the wrong side in the war, at which point Eisenhower sacked him. But he'd also said, oh, the British and the Americans, we're going to rule the world, so we may as well get along. We can do it more effectively. He said that before D-Day. So his cards were already marked, General Patton, George Patton, before D-Day even happened. So, it's thisweek.org.uk, you'll find that, and you can have a good old listen there. Download it, listen in the car, take it round with you, bother your friends with it, But we the idea really is to carry on doing what I used to do at the BBC, because they're not doing it anymore, Jason.
Well, I thank you for your work, sir. Guys, all follow Tony, another great guest here for the Burmese Brigade. I want to remind everybody that I'm doing it 3 to 7 times a day free here. Oh, did you miss it? That's right. I pieced together the 3 parts of the Palm Beach raid on Jeffrey Epstein that was released yesterday. Parts of it had been out there, but I got the whole thing going, and you can watch it now for free on my channel.